On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Up and down his Latin America tour, and especially in Mexico and Guatemala in the last 2 days, President Bush has been peppered with questions about U.S. immigration policy. He's promised Mexican President Felipe Calderon to push again this year for reform. At the heart of Bush's reform proposal has been an enormous guest worker program. But the United States already has a guest worker program, and this week a big report from the Southern Poverty Law Center calls guest work in the USA close to slavery. But they pick the apples. Up next on Point, we'll hear the slavery charge and look at guest workers and immigration reform in the United States. We will hear in a moment from the Southern Poverty Law Center on its new guest worker report. But first today, from Mérida on the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico, we're joined by Maura Reynolds, White House correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. She's been traveling with the president in Latin America for the past week. Maura, thanks very much for being with us.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Tell us about how immigration has played in the president's different stops. It sounds like in Central America, in Mexico, it's been close to the top of the list.
And in Guatemala as well. Guatemala and Mexico send a tremendous number of workers to the United States, legally and illegally, and it really overshadowed every other subject in these two countries.
We know that it's a huge debate back in the States, legislation likely to be put up again soon by Senators Kennedy and McCain. But what has the president heard from the national leaders south of the border there, in Mexico, in Guatemala? What's the message?
It's been fairly sharp. He was actually chastised fairly strongly in public yesterday by President Calderon of Mexico for not doing more about immigration. The system is broken, and no one knows that better than the people of Central America and Mexico who really want to come to the United States and work and can't figure out why we can't figure out a way for them to do it in a way that doesn't break our laws.
More, we're going to be looking at the guest worker piece of what the president would like to see in this hour and the status of current guest workers, which we're going to hear can be pretty rough in some circumstances. But guest workers are right at the heart of what the president has been generally describing, are they not?
Yes. I mean, what President Bush has always said is that there clearly are businesses in the United States who want to hire labor on a temporary basis from this part of the world, and they need to have a legal way to do it. And he also points out that there are many people in Mexico and Central America who would like to come for a little while to earn a little extra money to help their families, but don't really want to resettle in the United States, and that they should have a way to be able to do that, that this would be a beneficial two-way street. That is something on which there's not as much debate in the Congress as there is over the legalization of people once they've already been in the United States, and that's really the tricky issue down here. People here look at their relatives and friends in the North who've been there for 5 or 10 or 20 years and want to know what can be done to make them legal.
But most of all, they want some kind of solution, the president promising to push again this year, but no guarantee whatsoever in Washington that this will come to fruition, Maura.
No, I mean, and the president has acknowledged those difficulties. The fact of the matter is the legislation has to be passed by Congress. He doesn't do it. And he admitted in a press conference with the Guatemalan president that the problem has really been between Republicans. There are Republicans on all sides of this issue and very little consensus, and that's what scuttled last year's deal on immigration, which included a form of a guest worker program, and it's not no consensus developed yet.
The president heading home now from his 5-day tour of Latin America with an earful in Guatemala and Mexico on immigration in particular. Maura Reynolds has been with him. She joins us today from Mérida, Mexico, White House correspondent for the LA Times. Maura, thank you very much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Tom.
We are talking this hour about guest workers in America and the looming battle again over immigration reform. Joining me now from Montgomery, Alabama, is Mary Bauer, director of the Immigrant Justice Project at the Southern Poverty Law Center. She's author of the center's new report on guest workers called Close to Slavery, Guest Worker Programs in the United States. Mary Bauer, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
People will hear that as a very tough charge, close to slavery. Have you found the stuff to back it up?
Well, unfortunately, I think we have. I mean, we have spoken in the work that we do to literally thousands of guest workers. I have been personally representing guest workers since 1990. And what we see in practice in the real world, no matter what is written on paper, is that workers are systematically abused under guest worker programs. And it's not a question of one or two bad Apple employers. It's a question of the structure of the system that lends itself to fairly systematic abuse.
Hmm. Now, the guest worker program may change, may be expanded if there's immigration reform. But just to get the basics, describe for us what it is now, Mary Bauer. How many come each year? Under what kind of circumstances? And there are different streams, as I understand it.
Sure. Our report focused on H-2 workers, H-2A and H-2B workers. They come essentially in categories that are labeled unskilled work in agriculture for the H-2A program and in non-agricultural occupations like forestry, construction, landscaping, things like that.
And about 120,000 guest workers per year in all, is that right? And what portion of them unskilled, H-2A-B?
There are about 120,000 H-2 workers.
Oh, I see.
There are additional highly skilled H-1 workers and other kinds of programs. But our report is talking about the H-2 program, and that's about 120,000 workers, largely but not exclusively from Latin America.
Where do they come from? What portion from Latin America?
About three-quarters come from Mexico. About 90% come from Latin America. So you've got Mexico, Guatemala. We've had clients from Peru, Bolivia, the Dominican Republic, Thailand, Indonesia, India.
And give us a kind of cook's tour of the sorts of industries that they work in.
About 32,000 of the workers work in agriculture. Those are H-2A workers. The H-2B workers work largely in forestry, hospitality such as hotels, construction, seafood processing, landscaping. Those are the sort of biggest occupations relying on these. Right now, there's a seasonal or temporary requirement to the program. So year-round permanent work is not eligible to hire guest workers under our current program.
So how long do they usually come for at a stretch?
Generally, less than a year.
Less than a year, and from as far away as Indonesia. That's a long way to come for less than a year.
Right, and it's a lot of money that people are paying to get these jobs to find out that they're, you know, short-term temporary jobs.
Now, presumably, they don't come to be cheated. What is the program supposed to be? How's it supposed to work?
Well, I mean, the problem is there's not a lot of regulation, frankly. I mean, there's substantially more regulation related to the agricultural workers than the non-ag workers. I suppose, theoretically, the workers are supposed to come for a short time, you know, get paid decently and go home. In practice, what we see, though, is that workers they come in debt. They have to pay enormous sums of money for these jobs.
They come in debt. They pay money for the jobs. How does that work? Why? They're told they're going to make $1 million if they just put something up front to get them here. You've written that they mortgage their farms and homes abroad to get these temporary guest worker jobs in the U.S. Why do they do that?
Because, well, often because they're lied to, sometimes because they think it's going to be a good deal. And no doubt there are workers who do make money under this system. But the power disparity between worker and employer in a system like this is so vast that abuse is almost an inevitable result. So we have workers who arrive here $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 in debt for a short-term, low-wage job. They get here, they're entitled to work only for the employer who petitioned for them.
Mm-hmm.
So if they don't like the situation, they can't go work anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
If they're being underpaid, if they're being abused, they can't leave. And because they're so dramatically in debt, they can't go home as a practical matter.
And they're in debt not to their employers or to recruiters?
Generally to recruiters. Sometimes they're agents of the company. Often they're third-party recruiters.
So they start in debt. They can't leave their employer. What about the conditions of their employment? Are they paid the proper wage? How do they live?
We often see workers who are paid substantially less than that, than they're entitled to under the law. I mean, we see that fairly chronically. We have been involved in something like 7 large-scale lawsuits on behalf of workers over the last 2 years alone, involving systematic underpayment of wages, and that's just something we see. And you can understand that a worker in a situation like that, desperately in debt and tied to this one employer, has very little power to sort of complain about conditions. And so we see industries that rely chronically upon guest workers have this kind of downward race to the bottom in terms of wages, so that even employers who want to pay people reasonable wages or legal wages are at kind of a competitive disadvantage.
You describe workers living in squalid conditions, denied medical benefits, guest workers virtually held captive by employers who hold their documents, mortgaged at home, cheated out of wages in the United States. And is this a minority, a majority? Is this the typical experience, or are you just looking at the worst of the worst cases?
We're not just looking at the worst of the worst. I mean, we go out and talk to workers all the time. We do kind of systematic outreach to workers. And I'm not saying that every single H-2 worker has been, you know, underpaid and abused. But the fact is that it happens systematically, that it is not a coincidence and it is not a few bad employers. We get calls every week from guest workers whose documents were seized.
We're also joined right now from Washington, D.C. by Daniel Restrepo, director of the America's Project at the Center for American Progress. He served on the Democratic staff of the House International Relations Committee from 93 to 96, looked a lot at Latin American policy there. He's a first-generation American of Colombian and Spanish parents. Daniel Restrepo, thank you for joining us.
Good to be with you, Tom.
You hear what Mary Bauer's group has found. They're calling the guest worker program something close to slavery. But guest workers are integral to the vision of the future that President Bush has begun to paint for us. Describe for us how. What does the president have in mind for guest workers in an immigration reform program?
One of the big aspects of comprehensive immigration reform is how do you deal with the future flow, is the term that's used in Washington.
Future flow as in flow across the border?
Future flow of folks who come to work in the United States. And how do you create regulated channels to bring people here who want to work here and who are filling jobs that the U.S. economy requires that are not generally not filled by U.S. workers?
Mm-hmm.
So there's many reasons for doing that. One of the main reasons is to take pressure off the border itself and to be able to focus border resources towards the security aspects that should be addressed at the border instead of using Border Patrol to regulate the labor markets of the United States.
So systematize
right
it, regulate it, make it into something that people understand. And what about the scale of it? Would it grow under President Bush's vision?
It would grow significantly under President Bush's vision and under the vision of folks in the Congress. One of the real kind of sticking points here is the terms and conditions of this kind of program. President Bush speaks in very broad terms about a guest worker program. And when the Bush administration speaks of specifics, they largely speak of expanding the existing program. And that, for obvious reasons, as laid out in this very timely and important report, is a problematic thing.
Expansion on what scale? Mary Bauer is talking about 120,000 H-2 workers now, unskilled workers now. What might that become? What would it become overall in President Bush's vision?
President Bush's vision doesn't have specific numbers in it at the moment. When Congress considered this, when the Senate considered this last time, in the last Congress last year, the numbers were as high as 400,000, were ultimately scaled back to between 200,000 and 250,000.
And would that be just unskilled or inclusive?
With different triggers. That would be the functional equivalent of the unskilled, of the H-2 visa program.
So at least a kind of doubling and maybe tripling or more.
Yeah, one of the important things to remember here, and this report focuses on the H-2 unskilled labor that is in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
There's a third kind of unskilled labor that goes beyond the H-2A and H-2B, and those are the folks who are here in an undocumented status, who are toiling in conditions very similar to those, if not worse than those, that are documented in this report.
But those
and,
are not
those
guest
are
workers.
Technically
speaking, those are not guest workers.
I mean, they're not guest workers.
Jobs.
Right, in reality, that's another class of unskilled workers who have no worker protections in the same way that, unfortunately, as documented in this report, the H-2 workers suffer from at the moment. So we're dealing with it's actually a larger class of people who would be folded into this program. So I was just kind of added that to think about the scope of the problem we're dealing with. It's not just a not the 120,000 people in the H-2 program today. It's the large unskilled pool of labor that is being carried out by folks in the H-2 program and in the undocumented status, which encompasses a great many people in the United States.
And then we're talking millions, many millions. Mary Bauer, with that perspective, why have you focused on the guest worker, the legal guest workers in particular here?
Well, our office has called for comprehensive immigration reform. But what we have said is that we know what guest worker programs in the United States look like in practice. And ours is a cautionary tale. We're saying is, policymakers, look at what you're talking about before you leap into this. Look at this. And what we see in practice is that guest worker programs should not be the model for immigration reform. And if we want to do that, if policymakers say guest worker programs, that's the way to go, then they should build in a whole lot more kind of protections for workers that might work in the real world. Because what we have now is a terrible system.
Terrible. Are you saying, again, I want to get back to... Are you saying overall or a minority of bad apples? Are you saying most of these guest workers are abused, close to slavery? Can you make that big a charge?
I believe that these programs systematically abuse workers. And I will not say that every worker is subject to the kind of abuse that we detail, but that it is prevalent enough to be a part of the system and extremely disturbing. And when you look at how the system works, you see that it is not incidental to the system. It's built into the system. It's the structure of the program, the lack of legal protections, the inability workers have to enforce what legal rights they have. All of those combine to mean that workers are systematically abused.
Let's go to someone who has used the system and knows many who do. Joining us right now from Lake Park, Georgia, is Dan Bremmer, president of AgWorks, Inc., where he helps farmers and associations organize and comply with the H-2 guest worker program. He was district director for the Department of Labor in Atlanta from 1990 to 97. Got workers coming in down there to help with crops like tomatoes, watermelons, bell peppers, cucumbers, squash, right on down. Dan Bremmer, thanks very much for joining us.
Tom, thank you very much for having me on your program.
The Southern Poverty Law Center in your backyard there looks at this program and calls it close to slavery. How do you respond, Mr. Bremmer?
Well, I'd like to respond to that by saying that certainly there are some people who may not comply with all the rules and regulations. But my background in investigative work and so forth, and my work with farmers over the last 10 years to bring legal workers for them, says that the vast majority of these workers are not in slavery, that they come here, they do their work, they are paid correctly, they're housed correctly, and they go back home to their families in their native country.
What does correct pay and housing mean for guest workers in your neck of the woods, Dan Bremmer?
Well, it's not only my neck of the woods. We operate pretty much nationwide.
Okay.
And what that means is that they're paid the wages that the government specify they be paid. And in most places, it's $8 to $9 an hour for a farm worker. The employer, for example, in Georgia, these employers here pay the workers' way to the job site from their hometown. They pay the visa fees for the workers in their home country. They give them free housing in an agriculture setting. In non-agriculture, there's no free housing provided. And that they pay, here in Georgia, $8.51 an hour. And these workers also are given transportation to town. They have access to medical care. They're all are covered under the workers' compensation program, where, for example, in Georgia, the general law does not require workers' comp. But so, when they come as a guest worker, they are covered.
So when you hear the charges, and I don't know if you have, but you may read the cases outlined in the Southern Poverty Law Center's report. They say guest workers routinely cheated out of wages, forced to mortgage their futures at home for low-wage temporary jobs here, virtually held captive by employers, they say, forced to live in squalid conditions, denied medical benefits. You say, is that a fantasy or is that part of the picture? That if it is, how could it be fixed?
Okay, that's a fair question, Tom. It could be part of the program in some cases, but certainly not the vast majority of cases. Part of the problems that the report talks about happen in the home country of the workers. Sometimes down in their own home country, there are unscrupulous people who charge them. That certainly is true. And definitely, Mary Bauer is absolutely correct in that there could be more reform in the home countries of these workers to keep these unscrupulous recruiters and so forth from charging these workers and letting them enter our country with debt. But they're not the only people who charge. There are a great many of attorneys in the United States who work with the H-2B program, and their fees are paid by the worker also instead of by the employer.
But what about once they get here, cheated out of wages, virtually held captive, living in squalid conditions? What do you say?
There could be people who absolutely are treated that way. I can't deny that, and I would have to agree with Mary Bauer that that does happen in some cases, but certainly not the vast majority of cases. In fact, let's talk about housing, for example. All of the agriculture workers who come must live in government-inspected housing. The government, before you can ever bring a guest worker, inspects that housing very, very thoroughly. They also, during the course of their employment, inspect the housing, in Georgia at least once during the period of employment. The U.S. Department of Labor Wage and Hour Division conducts many investigations of H-2A employers, and the housing is part of it. The pay is part of those investigations.
So it looks okay to you, Mary Bauer. How about it? Dan Bremmer's in the middle of it, and he says, yes, there may be problems, but the overwhelming majority, overseen, regulated, and A-okay.
Well, I can say to that in response that we have a team of 13 people working in this project, going out and visiting and talking to guest workers every day. And that's not the experience in the real world. I understand what the law requires, and I will give him that H-2A housing is generally inspected. There are no regulations requiring any kind of inspections for H-2B workers. There are a lot more H-2B workers than there are H-2A workers. So there are no substantive housing requirements related to H-2B workers.
That's hospitality, forestry, and the rest, yep.
Yes, that's right. And there's no requirement that housing be provided for free. So we've talked to workers living in terrible conditions who are paying $1,000 per person per month in a room where 24 people are housed. Saw that last week. So I'm not making this stuff up, and it's not a question of, one or two bad employers.
Let's hear from our listeners on this from Santa Rosa Beach, Florida. Richard is on the line. Hi, Richard. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I work at a resort. I'm a recreation manager, and this is the second year where we've hired workers from out of the country. And just to speak to my experience, last year we had 8 in my department alone, and they lived in an area that was about 45 minutes to an hour from where they actually worked. So their sponsors, so to speak, provided them transportation, but they were not allowed to find their own transportation.
Is that such a hardship? Overall, how did it look? Did it look reasonable or bad from the worker's perspective?
Well, they charged them $75 a month apiece for the transportation and were not allowed to find alternative transportation. While they lived in homes that had 3, maybe 4 bedrooms, and there was 12 to 15 people in each house, and they were charged $300, $400, sometimes $500 a month for living.
So it doesn't look so good to you in that case?
No, it looked really bad. I mean, here we had people who we actually developed pretty good relationship with. We still keep in touch with some of them, and they were working for about $8 an hour, paying $400 a month in rent each, and having to pay for their transportation with no alternatives. And, they'd put in many, many hours over a pay period, and when they finally get their paycheck, I saw checks of about $150.
Do you think this ought to be part of immigration reform, an expansion of this, Richard?
Absolutely. It's very unfair to them. They did talk about how they had to raise money to even get over here, and they're still in school, and their families would sell things or put up money. Of course, some of them are a little more well-off than others, but each story was about the same. And so they'd come and work with us for 6 months, sometimes 8 months, and leave with absolutely nothing.
Investing a lot and not taking home maybe what they hope for. Richard, thanks for calling. Let me get another call here from Hopkinsville, Kentucky. Danny, you're on the air.
Hello. Thank you, Tom. My dad is a business manager for an operation that they farm about 16,000 acres and grow a lot of tobacco. And they have the same H-2A workers coming up from Monterey area year after year after year. These guys, they come up here and they work about 9 months out of the year. They make twice or three times what they can in Mexico. They live in great conditions here. The farmer pays for their transportation to and from. They provide, like I said, good housing.
Danny, do you have a sense of your dad as an exception then, or is this what you see by and large in the guest worker program?
Well, I mean, and I can only speak for the Western Kentucky area.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of these H-2A workers up here, and they're treated with just great respect. And like I said, you have the same workers coming back year after year after year. And I mean, I even know of one of the farmers that went down to Mexico to visit just on vacation and stayed in the home of one of the workers.
Yeah.
I understand that there's bound to be abuse in any program, but the lady there seems to be painting with a very, very broad brush, and I just want people to know that what is the alternative? The alternative is illegal immigration and people sleeping under bridges, you know.
Yep. Danny, we hear it. Let me put it to Mary Bauer. Mary, what's the alternative, Danny asked?
Well, in response to his point, because there is an employer or several employers who treat people well, that doesn't answer the question about whether this is a good system and whether these rules are good and whether this is structured in a way to protect workers, because it's clear that on those questions, the answer is that it's not a good system. And it's a false dichotomy to say that the only solution is a guest worker program. There's lots of other models for what comprehensive immigration reform could look like that would not be a giant-scale guest worker program.
We'll talk about that. Dan Bremmer, I've just got you for a few more seconds here. Would you like to see the guest worker program expanded as part of immigration reform? More guest workers, Dan?
Well, I think there's certainly a place for guest workers. A lot of workers do not want to live here permanently. They want to be residents of their own home countries, but they do want to come here and work and support their families. We need those workers, and a lot of industries like agriculture only needs them for 4, 5, 6, 7 months a year, and then they could go home. If we had a program pretty much like we have now that works, they come, they work, they go back home to where they want to be.
Dan Bremmer, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me on your program.
We've been joined from the Southern Poverty Law Center by Mary Bauer and from the Center for American Progress in Washington by Daniel Restrepo. Daniel, I wanted to ask you, President Bush, it's hard to keep all the pieces of these potential reforms straight, but I think I've heard him talk about some status that would let foreign workers come for quite a long time, maybe 6 years in this country before they would go home. Have I got that right? And would those be considered guest workers too?
You do have that right, and one of the problems with the label guest workers is that it's used very – it has a actual formal definition, and that is the one that's being addressed in this report,
mm-hmm.
but it's used very kind of willy-nilly. It's used in an informal way to describe a whole lot of different things.
But if people are here for 6 years, would they have these same vulnerabilities, only working for one employer, and the kind of vulnerability that comes with that?
Yes, and that's the real problem with any expansion of the there's an important cautionary tale, as Ms. Bauer noted here, that if you're going to expand on this model, you've got to learn the lessons of this model. And one of the real problems here is we're not believing in the marketplace. We're not allowing people to have employment mobility once they get to the United States, and that's a fundamentally important way to defend workers' rights. If somebody is tied to an employer, they are subject to exploitation in a way that somebody who can up and leave isn't. That kind of detail, that and the putting people on a path to a permanent status in the United States also would provide them with a great deal more protection in a meaningful sense rather than just on paper. So those are the kinds of details that whatever program we're talking about, whether it is a guest worker program, an expanded worker visa program, which is some of the language that's now being used, it's important to learn the lessons of this report and not to replicate them on a larger scale.
Let's hear what our listeners have learned. Jack is calling from Luana, Iowa. Hi, Jack. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I work in an industry that was taken over by Hispanic labor a decade ago or so. And
what industry, Jack?
Forestry, tree planting in particular, And in 1980, we were making $800 and $900 a week. You know, $15, $18 an hour.
In 1980, that was pretty good. Pretty good money.
Yeah. And now Hispanic workers make about $8 an hour.
All these years later,
in the industry, yeah. And but what I really wanted to point out is that the real gorilla in the room is the unwillingness of the American consumers and contractors and employers to pay the true value of labor, and that I believe that everyone that works in this country deserves a middle-class wage, even if you're just a worker. And these discussions always miss that.
Even if you're planting trees, was it guest workers that replaced you, Jack, and your colleagues?
Well, at first it was largely illegal workers, largely at first. Now I understand some of the employers now have the guest workers.
But in any case, you say, give us a living wage and we'll plant those trees.
That's right. And we were buying houses and putting ourselves through college and putting our kids through college on those wages in 1980. And now we can't. And, you know, if you want to solve the illegal immigration problem, raise wages.
Jack?
Until us folks will work.
We hear it loud and clear, and we appreciate your call. Let me get another from Provincetown, Massachusetts. Joy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
It's nice to talk to you.
You too.
Interesting program. I represent 41 Jamaican H-2B workers.
You represent them. What do you mean by that, Joy?
They work for me. They've been working for me for 15 years. I own a seafood restaurant.
Okay, sure. You're right out there on the tip of Cape Cod, and you've got a lot of Jamaicans. Are they guest workers, you're saying?
They're all H-2Bs. There's probably 5,000 of them on the Cape. This is the entire Cape Cod area. And I would invite Mary Bauer to come to the Cape and talk to all of us, and maybe she would see a different side.
Are they close to slavery?
Believe me, these kids have worked for me so long. They've built their houses in Jamaica. They've sent their children to school in Jamaica. And they attribute it all to the lobster pot because that's where they've made their money. They're here for 8 months. They do a great job. They're paid very well. And they are very happy, or they wouldn't keep coming back year after year after year. But
are you saying that you are the typical employer, do you think, Joy?
I'm on the Cape. I can't speak to it in any other area. But I think that on the Cape, there might be a positive side to the H-2B program. But let me add to this quickly.
Yeah.
I would like to say to you, each and every year, we have to go through the process of reapplying them to get them certified to work here.
Yeah.
And it is an ordeal. And I will tell you, there is so much uncertainty. Will they get through this year? Will we get, what about the cap? We need legislation to either provide a guaranteed path for these people to come and work,
mm-hmm.
so we can make business plans,
mm-hmm.
and so our workers can make living plans in their own country.
So it sounds like you would be happy with an expanded number of guest workers. But let me ask you then, Joy, you just heard Jack in Iowa. You heard Jack say, look, pay me a living wage to do this work, and you don't need anyone from abroad. I'll step up and do it.
Okay. I've owned my restaurant for 35 years. I have tried to hire Americans for 35 years. I have probably two-thirds of my staff that are Americans. But Americans don't do dishes. And it's a very, very documented fact. So I'm happy to have whoever wants to work for me anytime. And we go through a very long process with the Division of Career Services to guarantee that there's no Americans that want these jobs. And I've been doing it for years. But what I'm suggesting to you is that whatever plan whoever has to come up with, we would be much better served by Congress not to go back every single year to try and beg them to give us more security in our employment ability so that
right.
we can get the people.
Right, your workforce. So you say bring them in, streamline it, and you'll be happy when they do. Americans don't do dishes. Well, you've been in the business 35 years. You've got a front row seat on that. Joy, thanks for calling. I want to get a voice in here from another voice from Washington. Mark Krikorian joins us. He's executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies. It's a Washington think tank seeking tighter controls on immigration. He's a contributor to the National Review Online. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
So we've got the Southern Poverty Law Center saying close to slavery. It's an outrage what's going on here. Your group is saying, look, we don't want guest workers anyway. Have I got that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I have to say I've often not been impressed by SPLC's work, but this is an example where they've actually made a good contribution to the debate. But the question is not just whether the program results in the kind of abuses they've documented. Remember, 40 years ago, Edward R. Murrow did a show called Harvest of Shame.
Harvest of Shame.
Which was very much the same kind, documented the same kind of development.
Mm-hmm.
The question is the system, I mean, is the very idea of importing huge numbers of pre-modern workers from abroad, is that itself a problem?
Pre-modern workers, that's a loaded phrase. What do you mean by that?
We're talking about people from traditional societies, essentially peasants from abroad, to work in whether it's washing dishes or picking, you know, crops on farms, that sort of thing.
But what's the problem with it? I mean, you call them peasants. If you're right, they surely know how to pick crops.
Sure they do. There's no question about it. It's not an observation on the sort of the moral quality of these people. The fact is they are 19th century workers in a 21st century economy. And the SPLC report shows what happens when you import huge numbers of workers in a guest worker system where they're tied to a job, and it always leads to abuses.
What about our restaurateur calling in from Provincetown on Cape Cod saying, I can't run my business without these guest workers?
Well, the thing is that businesses always say that, and often, and I'm not saying they're not telling the truth, at least as they see it. The problem is they don't see the forest for the trees. 40-plus years ago, when the last big guest worker program was being debated, the elimination of it was being debated, this was the Mexican Bracero program, it was called. Well, farmers in California said they would cease to exist. The entire agriculture would disappear without these workers. Well, Congress got rid of it anyway, and the farmers shrugged and said, okay, well, all our expenses on lobbying failed, so let's actually try to deal with this new situation.
But didn't they deal by hiring a lot of illegal workers?
That didn't happen for a good 10, 15 years. What they did was mechanize. What they did was change the way they did business to use the existing labor more efficiently, and also by raising wages and benefits, attracting more of the labor that's already there. Every job that immigrants do is done mostly by Americans nationwide. Now, on the Cape, there may be a lot of, Cape Cod, there may be a lot of foreigners washing dishes, but nationwide, the majority of people who wash dishes for a living are native-born Americans. That's the case for every occupation in the country.
Let me turn to Mary Bauer. Mary, Mark Krikorian kind of sees you on the left. You may see him on the right, but are you on the same side of this issue? Are you also essentially saying, stop this, let Americans do these jobs?
We are saying that this isn't a system that we want to replicate on a grand scale. We are saying that this is a troubled system, and you know, this is not a model for fixing what we do regard as a broken immigration system. We're calling for comprehensive immigration reform, but we're saying, look at this before you take action, because this is not something that should be expanded.
But would you stop these workers at the border, as Mark would, or would you bring them in a more closely regulated and maybe not quite such a captive system?
Well, what we've said is, if we're not economists, if we determine as a society that we actually need more workers, okay, you know, we would obviously defer to the judgment of Congress about how many workers we need, but they should be brought in as real members of the community with some opportunity for permanent residency and with the opportunity to reside with their families. I mean, a description of these people come in for 9 months out of the year and they're very happy. Well, they've left their spouses and children back home in Jamaica. I dare say they're not very happy. And whether or not, you know, this is something they have to do to pay the bills doesn't mean that this is the way that we as a nation want to structure our immigration system.
Let's hear from a couple more listeners in the middle of all this. Melvin's calling from Boston. Hi, Melvin, you're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. My opinion regarding to this issue is that I am from Guatemala.
Yes, from Guatemala. Okay.
Yes. I see the situation in this way. First of all, we have to recognize that we have imperfections in the labor market, in the labor system. They are imperfections. Secondly, I don't think there is a slavery in the labor market related to all of us immigrants in this country. I don't swallow that. It's not realistic. They are imperfections. They are violations possible there are violations.
But Melvin, may I ask you, did you come on a guest worker program to this country? Or?
No, sir. I'm a permanent resident. I'm right. married with an American woman, so right. I didn't have it that way. But I had experience to share histories with many, many immigrants out there.
But do you see Guatemalan workers in particular as abused under the guest worker program?
No, it's no abuse. It's the way, it's our culture, how we work. We do whatever is in the way, it doesn't matter. It's hot, it's cold, no matter weather, no matter situation. It's the way we grew up, we like to work, no matter what, because Americans, they have different perspective how to treat human beings. They think many people out there are exploiting Americans.
So hot or cold, you're happy to work. Should we be bringing in more guest workers, or should Guatemala offer them better opportunities, Melvin?
Let me say it straight with you. I think the immigration reform and the legal way will be more positive in this country because no taxes will be a way for the system. First of all, in that way, and everybody will be happy coming here legal way, security will be better, and so on.
Hot or cold, they'll come and work. Melvin, we've got the nut of that, and I appreciate your call. Let's get another from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Sarah, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My name is Sarah, and I'm temporarily in Cambridge, but my last job was actually as a consular officer in Guatemala City.
Okay.
And so in that role, I actually managed the HCV program and probably interviewed, I don't know, a couple thousand potential and returning H-2B workers.
So you were approving guest worker visas there.
Exactly.
What did you see, Sarah, in brief?
I saw a tremendous amount of fraud and abuse. And it was very, what was most disturbing to me is that, at least as a consular officer, our hands were really tied because the way the law is written, there is so little you can do about the abuse of companies.
And these companies are middlemen, third-party recruiters.
The recruiters are the worst. There was also, it's hard to describe, but a lot of the companies, the so-called companies in the United States, are actually, again, another layer. They're bringing people in and then also sort of reselling them to other potential employers.
Sarah, in a nutshell, do you think it could be done better? Could we expand this program but do it better? Or from the front lines, do you say shut it down?
I would hate to see this program expanded. It was just an absolute mess. And possibly, I think in theory, it's a fantastic idea.
We're losing your line, but we heard absolute mess there, Sarah, and I appreciate your call. Wow. Daniel Restrepo, a final thought from you here. Are we going to end up with something better on the other side of reform if and when it comes, or not?
I think we are going to end up with something better on the other side of reform. This is a very complex issue. The legal migration system in this country needs reform. The illegal immigration system in this country needs reform and addressing. Part of that has to be dealing with the flow of labor into the United States, both to meet economic needs in the United States and to meet the people who are inevitably going to come here. Economic development in those source countries is a long-term important aspect of all of this, but unfortunately our debate is stuck at our own border at the moment, and we need to deal with the system that exists today, make it better, and then deal with the real structural issues that are at the bottom of the immigration reform issue at a global scale and certainly at a hemispheric scale.
Mary, do you see the political will to take this on and fix it?
Well, not in the debate right now. I think the range of debate has been, you know, astonishingly narrow. And we issued this report, you know, precisely so that we can talk about how to make this better and how to create an immigration reform that doesn't include a giant expansion of this really flawed system.
Mark Ricori, and you say bar the door. We've just got 15 seconds here. Do you think the door is going to be barred, or guest workers are part of our lives for the foreseeable future?
Well, neither. I don't think Congress is going to succeed either way in dealing with immigration this year, because it looks like the push for a big amnesty and guest worker program is falling apart, actually, right now on Capitol Hill. So nothing's going to happen, I think, until after the presidential election.
Well, we will watch with a much more informed eye as it all unfolds. Mark Krikorian at the Center for Immigration Studies, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Daniel Restrepo at the Center for American Progress, thanks for joining us, Mr. Restrepo.
Thank you, Tom.
And Mary Bauer, thanks for all your work on this subject, and thanks for being with us today from the Southern Poverty Law Center. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.